Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. Today, I'd like to welcome our guest, Alyssa from the United States, who takes LDN for MCAS and POTS. Thank you for joining us today, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
So to start with, you know, how old were you when you first started to notice there was something not quite right?
I was 34 and I'm 36 now. So it was about a little over two years ago. Looking back, I noticed a few things from childhood and, you know, teenage years that kind of could have been clues, but it really kind of started with heavier symptoms in late 2021.
Okay. So could you tell us what were those symptoms at that time?
So my first kind of biggest symptom was fatigue, like some pretty heavy fatigue. We were traveling back home from a trip and, you know, had some flight complications, that kind of thing. And I thought, well, I just need to, you know, sleep, have a good night's sleep, and then I'll be fine. But I wasn't. And so I just, you know, had this continual fatigue and, you know, started checking in with the doctor, like what's going on. And, you know, of course they first thought it was some sort of mental thing. And so we went that route for a while and I was like, this just isn't helping, like something isn't working. And so eventually I found myself on various Facebook groups for long COVID, even though I don't think that's what triggered this for me. And that's where I learned about POTS and MCAS. And so started to figure out, could that be me? That sounds like me. And, you know, eventually ended up with diagnoses.
And was fatigue the only symptom that you were experiencing before diagnosis?
No. So fatigue, I started getting like a rash around my mouth. I mean, I think I didn't realize it at the time, but elevated heart rate was definitely there, especially upon standing. I wasn't wearing a heart rate monitor at the time, so I wasn't aware of that, but eventually figured out that was definitely true. I knew that I felt normal when I was lying down, but every other time I did not feel normal. And definitely a lot of GI issues as well. Also some eczema here and there, brain fog. I'm sure there's more, but those are the ones that are coming to mind.
Could you explain what the GI issues were, if you don't mind?
I don't mind. Yeah. So for GI issues, alternating constipation and diarrhea, a lot of abdominal pain, I eventually figured out, you know, sensitivity to certain foods, some of which were high histamine, gluten as well. Took a while to, you know, sort of figure out the patterns on all of that, but those were kind of some of the sensitivities.
So did you have any vomiting?
No, I did not.
I hate vomiting.
Me too. I'm very grateful I didn't have that.
I bet, yes. So fainting, I mean, people with POTS tend to faint a lot. Did that happen to you?
I did not faint. I did have one episode of presyncope. It's kind of I'll make it a long story short, but I had a root canal that got infected and it had to be dealt with. And I had that done without having had any breakfast, and you know, I kind of tend to think maybe anybody would have had that reaction, but yeah, I had one episode of presyncope. I was luckily in a doctor's office when it happened, and that turned out to be sort of the experience that led to my primary care doctor prescribing a beta blocker for the first time. So,
okay. So once you got your diagnosis, what was the treatment plan?
So for POTS, once I got diagnosed, which took about 13, 14 months to get the POTS diagnosis, I was started on I started on Nadolol, which is a beta blocker, prior to my tilt table test, which led to the diagnosis. And then once I was officially diagnosed, I started taking Mestinon or pyridostigmine. Don't know if I'm saying that right. But that is intended to kind of help increase blood pressure. And that gave me a bit of quality of life back once I started that. And then for MCAS took about 13 months to get diagnosis. And I take a number of things for that. Antihistamines, both H1 and H2, vitamin C, vitamin D, low dose naltrexone, which it took me quite a while to kind of titrate up on that. But now I'm at the sort of typical dose for that. Looking over here because I've got all of my medicines over there. I'm on a number of supplements, working with a dietitian who knows POTS and MCAS as well. So I take a number of supplements with her. So that's typically my treatment plan. I did do for a little while a low histamine. It's pretty strict low histamine, no gluten, no dairy, no yeast diet. I don't have to be quite as strict anymore, but I still primarily will eat lower in histamine. And for POTS, I'm gradually, very gradually working on trying to do recumbent exercise as well.
That's good. Could you talk us through a typical day before your diagnosis? What did a typical day look like for you?
Good question. Typical day would be waking up exhausted, and taking a while to sort of convince myself, okay, you need to get out of bed, because I work full time, and I was thankfully able to keep working full time throughout this whole time. There were times when I wondered whether that was gonna be possible, but it ended up being possible. But I would, wake up really tired, drink a bunch of water, and then lie back down. I read that trick somewhere, and that did seem to help me with getting up. Eat breakfast, take morning medicines. I also take Cromolyn for MCAS. I forgot about that one. My bad. That's been really helpful. I would go to work. Some days I would take a sick day because I was just too exhausted, or maybe I had done too much in a previous day and wore myself out to the point where I couldn't work that day, and my work was very understanding. So I would work and, try to figure out, okay, what am I gonna eat today? Where do the restrictions come in? How do I find the energy to cook? And can I do my recumbent exercises today, or have I pushed myself too much on a previous day doing something else where I can't do it? So lots of energy management, I would say. I thankfully have been able to sleep pretty well most of the time, but I feel like my circadian rhythm has been off to the point where I am most tired in the morning and I am most awake when it's about time to go to bed. And so that also factors into the sort of energy management. So maybe that's a theme of days prior to diagnosis. Well, I'd also spend a lot of time on the internet kind of looking around for what could possibly be wrong with me, and a lot of time trying to figure out which doctors could maybe be helpful. I did also listen to the Standing Up to POTS podcast, and that's where I found Dr. Weinstock, actually, was through that podcast.
Okay. So once you'd got your diagnosis, you got on your medication, once you were stable, what's a typical day like for you now?
Now I'm fine. I'm only now like kind of starting to be stable, even though I was diagnosed a year and a half ago. It turns out that our house had hidden mold in it, and so we actually had to leave the house and Going on a couple of vacations kind of gave us that, oh, we need to look into this. But now that we've been out for about 4 months, I am starting to actually be stable. And so I still wake up tired, but not as tired. It's easier to wake up. I don't have nearly as much trouble working. I do have a different job than I had before, but that's not related. I work from home. I take far fewer sick days now. I'm able to walk further. I'm able to do more. I'm not so afraid of sort of exercise or exertion. At this point, I've still got a long way to go in terms of building up stamina and being able to exercise. But even just, getting out of the house where there was mold has helped so much with so many different symptoms. I sleep better. I feel more awake during the day. Less brain fog. Yeah, just so many things have the GI stuff I'm still working on, but it is also noticeably better.
Was going to be my next question, so you've addressed that.
No.
Thank you. So you were saying initially, when you were trying to be diagnosed or to find out what was actually wrong with you, that they thought it was psychological.
Yes.
So how did that impact on you, thinking that you'd got this psychological problem, but it didn't seem to get better with what they were treating you with?
That was a frustrating time. So I have had in the past, I have had depression and I have taken antidepressants before. And I knew this was different, having had that experience already. I wasn't feeling sad. I wasn't feeling depressed. I was just tired. And so to have the doctor, meaning as well as they possibly could, say, well, you need to increase your antidepressants. And I tried it, but all it did was make me more tired. And so after eventually, finally, after I got my diagnoses, I was able to go back to this doctor and say, and she saw the diagnoses and she said, well, maybe it's not actually mental illness. Maybe you can go off of those antidepressants. But it took having diagnoses from doctors for that doctor to say that. And it's a little frustrating to know your own body and know what's going on and not have somebody understand. I think if knowledge of POTS and MCAS were more widespread, maybe I wouldn't have had that problem.
So, are you still taking antidepressants now, or have you come off them?
I came off of them, so I've been off for about a year. So last summer, sometime I was able to go off of them, and I have tried going off of them before, and it was never very effective. But this time, I was able, I had a headache for a couple of weeks, but that was it. I think I do kind of have a hypothesis that treating the MCAS, treating the POTS, maybe was what enabled me to actually get off of the antidepressants and not need them anymore.
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering, because a lot of people have MCAS and POTS for many years without knowing it. Did you think that maybe the depression came from the MCAS that had gone undiagnosed, that wasn't really a big issue, but was causing depression? Do
I
you think?
wonder if it was a factor. I'm not certain that it was the only factor, but I do wonder if it was a factor because I definitely noticed once I started, my whole regime of MCAS treatments that I was less anxious than I had ever been before. And, I was over feeling depressed like several years before getting my diagnosis, but yeah, just noticed a lot of improvement in that area with MCAS treatment. And so I do wonder if it was a factor.
Yes. I mean, there are so many teenagers and youngsters that suffer with anxiety and depression. It makes one wonder Have they got MCAS? You know, is that the problem? Because it is very easy to go undiagnosed, and so many people actually have it. So that would be good if we could stop people from feeling depressed and anxious. If nothing else, that would be pretty amazing, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Gosh, I really hope that this documentary that several doctors are working on will lead to greater awareness in the medical community and also just among everybody that MCAS is such a common, I've heard percentages like 17% somewhere, and I've heard these percentages, and so gosh, so many people must be out there undiagnosed and not know where to look for an answer either.
Exactly. And how awful to be told that, you know, if when you're fainting and vomiting and headaches and terrible fatigue, you can't get out of bed. And then to be told on top of that, it's in your imagination. It's all psychological. There's nothing wrong with you. That
Right.
must be so soul destroying.
And I'm sure I can understand when people get discouraged to the point where they stop seeking help because all they hear from their medical professionals is that it's all in your head, and they know this is not all in my head, but
Exactly.
I can't get anyone with any sort of authority to recognize that and to believe me. And so, really hoping for greater awareness.
Yes, and so many people have tests that come back completely negative,
Yes,
that
yes.
doesn't show anything.
That can be a disappointing feeling when you go in for all this blood work, all these tests, and the doctor says, "Great news, you're normal." And you're like, "Well, but I'm not." Where is the test that's going to show that I actually do have a problem? Maybe those
Exactly.
tests just aren't here yet, or I haven't found a doctor who will administer those tests yet, right?
Well, we have filmed like 95% of the documentary. We've just got a couple more pieces to do, and we're fundraising for the edit. So we're hoping to get as many people as we can making donations. And then the documentary, we want to be available and get as many people to watch it as possible. To address that issue, so the medical professionals will know what it is, patients will know how to treat it, etc. And there'll also be an education library that doctors can go to and get the information. So
Very exciting work.
you're part of the story now. So thank you very much for joining us
Oh,
today.
thanks for having me. Glad to help in any way I can.
I'm Dr. Leonard Weinstock, a guy who's been prescribing LDN since 2005, and I've seen the wonders, and I keep on seeing them, especially in hard-to-diagnose conditions. They're not that hard to do, but once you know about mast cell activation syndrome, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, you'll find that 17% of your friends or relatives have one or more of these conditions, and you can help them. We're making a documentary to wake up the medical community, to educate the population, but we need funding. So please fund whatever you can afford, no matter how little. MCASfund.com. That's MCASfund.com.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, LINDA, at LDNRT.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.